Good morning. It's Wednesday, July 17th. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, the doubts and debates the Democrats are having about President Biden's nomination. A look at how previous assassination attempts on presidents have shifted American gun policy. And the conservative plan to defund the agency that provides free and important weather reports for people across the country. In the immediate days following the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump, the drumbeat of public calls from Democrats for President Biden to exit the race has slowed down. But crucially, they did not disappear.
Yeah, with the Democratic Party right now, there is a huge difference between the public conversation and the private conversation.
That's Annie Linsky, a White House reporter with The Wall Street Journal.
The assassination attempt on former President Trump was a moment that just absolutely rattled the country, it rattled the Republican Party, it rattled the Democratic Party. And I do think, and our reporting showed, there was a sense of, like, we need a unifying moment here as Democrats. Do we want to be kind of openly in this revolt as the country is processing this awful thing that just happened?
But privately, there's still a lot of concern. The Washington Post spoke with more than a dozen Democratic strategists, members of Congress, and other Biden allies. Some are worried that Biden isn't being given the full picture of how he's polling by some of his top advisors. And the Post says that Biden and his team are generally skeptical of polls, particularly after the 2022 midterm elections. Polls then had suggested big Republican victories that didn't materialize. Other reporting speaks to how there is a belief among some advisors that Biden will once again mount a political comeback before November. Meanwhile, concerns from some congressional Democrats are coming to a head. They want to ditch plans to begin the process of nominating Biden as early as this weekend. According to multiple reports, a letter has been circulating among House Democrats calling on the party to slow down that process. At the same time, Biden himself is on the campaign trail and doing interviews with the hopes that he can still turn things around. Earlier this week, he sat down with NBC's Lester Holt and pushed back on calls for him to exit the race.
Look, I've been doing this a long time. The idea that I'm the old guy, I am, I'm old, but I'm only 3 years older than Trump, number one. And number two, my mental acuity has been pretty damn good. I've gotten more done than any president has in a long, long time, in 3.5 years. So I'm willing to be judged on that.
And yesterday, Biden addressed the NAACP convention, making the case that he's the better choice by citing the record lows for Black unemployment and poverty during his administration. He's also rolling out new policy ideas, like rent controls. And he's reportedly going to propose big changes for the Supreme Court, including term limits and an enforceable ethics code. As many Democrats are trying to influence Biden, Linsky says ultimately only a handful of people truly seem to have his ear.
This is, you know, a very personal decision and not one in which the president is reaching out to very many people. He does have an inner circle. They know him very intimately. So those people are considered the ones who could go to him and make a case of some sort to him that he should leave if they believe that. Now, the indications we have is they are not doing that.
One other Democrat to watch in the days ahead is former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She's reportedly been fielding calls with nervous Democrats, collecting information and polling, which has some wondering if she'll be reaching out to the president soon to offer counsel. Pelosi, who's now 84, has proved politically resilient for years, and she stepped down from her role as speaker early last year. In the aftermath of that assassination attempt against Trump, the conversation we're not hearing all that much about is gun policy. Throughout modern American history, attacks on presidents have spurred federal action on gun control. In 1963, John F. Kennedy's assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, used a military-style weapon that he had bought from a magazine ad to fire on the president's motorcade in downtown Dallas. In the days after, citizens and politicians had questioned how it was possible for him to buy a gun so easily. Here's an ABC report from that time.
The assassination of the president with a cheap surplus rifle that cost $12.78 and bought without restrictions has brought renewed attention on the laws that govern the sale of such weapons to the general public. And they are very few.
Pretty quickly, there was a congressional proposal to ban mail order sales of rifles. It never made it out of committee, but President Lyndon Johnson continued to push Congress on the issue. It took a few years and the assassinations of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Senator Robert F. Kennedy, but eventually Congress passed the Gun Control Act of 1968. President Johnson called it the most comprehensive gun control law ever signed in the nation's history.
It stops murder by mail order. It bars the interstate sale of all guns and the bullets that load them. It stops the sale of lethal weapons to those too young to bear their terrible responsibility.
Then, in 1981, a gunman shot President Ronald Reagan in Washington, D.C., puncturing his lung. Reagan was rushed to surgery and survived. Three others were also hit, including his press secretary, James Brady, who was shot in the head and ultimately paralyzed. Brady and his wife, both high-profile Republicans and gun owners, then started to campaign for gun safety legislation. The first version of what would become known as the Brady Bill was introduced in 1987, but it faced tough opposition from the NRA, and it died in committee. A few years later, President Clinton and then-Congressman Chuck Schumer revived it and got it to pass in Congress. Here's James Brady speaking at the bill signing.
What we are witnessing today is more than a bill signing, is the end of unchecked madness and the commencement of a heartfelt crusade for a safer and saner country.
The Brady Bill banned people convicted of domestic violence and those dishonorably discharged from the military from owning guns. It also established the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, which requires federally licensed gun dealers to run a check on someone before selling them a gun. And 1 year later, the Bradys also pushed for the federal assault weapons ban. That ban later expired, but it would have applied to the type of weapon that was used by the shooter in Pennsylvania this past weekend. Vox argues it seems unlikely that Saturday's shooting will lead to meaningful change in gun policy in this current political climate. But history shows us horrific events can, and sometimes do, spur change. Now let's turn to reporting from the Washington Post on a trend in higher education. Over the last year, since the Supreme Court struck down affirmative action in admissions, a growing number of universities have applied the principles of that ruling to financial aid, which means more and more universities are pausing, reshaping, or eliminating race-conscious grants and scholarships worth tens of millions of dollars.
But I suspect it's far more than that.
That's higher ed reporter Danielle Douglas Gabriel. The Post found at least $45 million of grant and scholarship money at stake across nearly 50 schools.
A lot of this is being driven by Republican-led state leaders, particularly attorneys general, where they're really starting to use a really broad interpretation of the court's ruling in order to apply it to other areas and realms of higher education.
At Duke University, a scholarship that's been around for nearly half a century was shut down. It covered tuition and housing for Black undergrads. The University of Iowa changed the criteria for an aid program for students from underrepresented groups. And at a number of schools in the University of Missouri system, race will no longer be considered in scholarship applications. The Supreme Court's ruling did not specifically mention financial aid, but conservative legal thinkers argue that universities should broadly eliminate any race-based policies. In Missouri, the Attorney General almost immediately told schools to do this for scholarships. As one NYU law professor put it to the Post, with the court's ruling, these schools really don't have a legal foot to stand on to fight for these scholarships. And advocates worry the impact will be huge.
Lots of Black and Hispanic students simply don't have the financial resources in order to afford school. And even though there is a broad belief that minority students receive the most scholarships and aid, federal data does not back that up. They do not receive as much as their white counterparts, and nor have they ever.
The Post also notes that doing away with race-conscious scholarships could actually have a more profound impact on higher ed than changes in admissions, Far more schools offer these types of scholarships to reach diversity goals compared to the number that use affirmative action for admissions. Some schools are now changing the terms of their scholarships to achieve the diversity they want to see without making them the target of lawsuits. There are moves to shift to giving scholarships to first-generation college students, for example. Another idea is to focus not on applicants' race, but on their commitment to equity and inclusion. But with the Supreme Court ruling hanging over the entire situation, any workaround could be challenged, so universities will have to tread carefully. Finally, to a few other stories being featured in the Apple News app that are worth checking out. New Jersey Senator Bob Menendez was convicted on all charges in a broad federal corruption case. Prosecutors said he used his political influence to covertly help the government of Egypt, among other crimes. He's the first sitting senator to be convicted of conspiring to act as a foreign agent. Politico looks at what comes next for the senator. He can try to stay in Congress, though he may be expelled. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has already called for his resignation. Menendez will be allowed to continue his current run for re-election as an independent. But under New Jersey law, he won't be able to vote if he's sentenced to prison before Election Day. And right now, that sentencing is set for late October. A new article from The Atlantic looks at how a future Trump administration might target weather reports that many Americans rely on. It's part of Project 2025, a policy blueprint that we've talked about on the show before. It's put together by a number of people who worked in Trump's administration. The Atlantic highlights how it would all but dissolve the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That includes severely cutting back the National Weather Service. The NWS issues critical alerts about things like hurricanes and flash floods, predictions about dangerous heat, and a whole lot more. Project 2025 calls for privatizing forecasting. The Atlantic points out the NWS only costs taxpayers roughly $4 per person per year, and that it's an important source of information at a time when we're dealing with heat waves, tornadoes, and an active hurricane season. And finally, on a related topic, CNN explains new research that says climate change is making our days longer. Melting polar ice caps are changing the shape of our planet, and that slows down the Earth's rotation. This is happening on a very, very small scale. We're talking about days adding roughly 1 millisecond over the course of a century. So it's not something that humans will notice, but our technology will. These tiny changes are big enough to impact our navigation and communication systems. You can read those stories in full in the Apple News app. And if you are already listening in the news app right now, we have a narrated article coming up next from Vogue that looks at an important influencer in Biden's circle. The magazine spent time with Dr. Jill Biden. The First Lady is one of the president's key advisors and closest confidants. She spoke to Vogue about the race and some of the most pressing issues that America faces. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.